To me, my X-Men, it's time for the old
Hello,
switcheroo where we're normally talking gaming retro with Mike and JMO.
I'm not Mike.
But I'm still JMO. Normally, we focus on our epic quest to research and review all 200 plus games in the Nintendo Switch Online retro catalog. But today, I'm very excited to present you with episode one of a new side series that we are calling the Old Switcheroo Screen Time. Here we'll give you our rants, raves, and reviews from the world of film and television. Mike unfortunately could not join us today, but I'm still very excited to be joined by my longtime friend and cosplay influencer extraordinaire, Brian Lee. How you doing, Brian?
Hello. You flatter me.
It's impressive.
I wouldn't count myself an influencer per se, but thank you.
You're
I
definitely
appreciate it.
extraordinaire, though. Like
Oh,
the
thank you.
cosplays you've put together, they're truly impressive and very clever.
Oh,
You've
thank
been a
you.
cosplayer for over 2 decades at this point, and you've been spotted at Comic-Con, Star Wars celebrations, and major Hollywood premieres dressed up as everything from DC's Nightwing to Short Round from the Indiana Jones series. And I don't think I've ever asked you, as long as I've known you, do you have a favorite cosplay you do?
Oh, that's like picking a favorite child, right?
Do you have a favorite child?
No, I just mean that, like, I mean it's hard to say. I mean, just given that so many of them I see as so much more than just the costume that I'm wearing, but also like for example, Nightwing, I surely wouldn't have been able to do that. Like, which is that was, by the way, it's probably my most ambitious build that I ever did, but I wouldn't have been able to do it without the enormous help of my friend Malachi, who did the bulk of the building of it, and my friend
Right.
Lisa, who we worked together on all of it. And so it's also the memory of that build, because that costume is so cumbersome to wear. I don't even like to think about, like,
It took you guys weeks. It's like movie quality.
oh, thank you. Ultimately, that's one of the things that I remember initially being annoyed how often people would mistake my costume. Even in moments where they're complimenting it in person, they were like, I realize a lot of people assume that we took the UD replicas bat suit, a suit that's worth, like, a replica that's worth thousands of dollars, and then just
Right.
repainted it. So of course, initially I just found that annoying, because I was like, well, we worked hard on this, but I was like, well, that's actually a really big compliment that they just thought that I shelled out thousands of dollars for some replica. And it's like, no, we made this from scratch.
And
So
we'll try to post a link to it if it can be seen somewhere online, but it's
that's excellent.
phenomenal. It's truly great. Well,
But
I was
then I
so
guess in terms of a favorite, I just think, I don't know, like, well, I don't know. I ultimately that I like Nightwing was it was a favorite because of the build process per se, but
Right.
there's a lot of other ones that I think I have more fun doing, like what I'm wearing right now, which is an awful cosplay per se, but also what you're wearing,
What's talking about? This is what
our
I dress
friend
like every
Tom,
day.
Professor
The
Xavier, of course.
psychic powers. Well,
Yeah.
I was so blessed and honored to be your plus one to the X-Men 97 fan event at Disney's El Capitan Theater on March 13th. We got to watch the first three episodes of Disney's long-awaited revival of the acclaimed X-Men animated series with members of the cast and crew in attendance. In fact,
And I do want to interject that, yeah, I was honored to take you, because you're my,
oh.
like, OG X-Men buddy. Well, I did also invite my sister as well, because we grew up watching the show together, and I know she really was hoping to make it out to it, but unfortunately she lives rather far, has kids, a scientist with all this, like, it'd be a lot of ordeal. We're lucky enough to live relatively close to Hollywood, but also, like, we go way back, you and me, to, like, I remember how much we nerded out over the whole, like, the whole run of the Fox X-verse, which, good God, it's 24 years now, and
That's wild.
we're still
Yeah.
getting another movie in it, technically, out of Deadpool and Wolverine this year. So,
I think we actually probably bonded over our love of the first X-Men movie because I remember I saw the first X-Men movie by myself at a matinee the first day it was out. So we didn't see it together, but I'm pretty sure
no,
we
we
saw
didn't.
X2 together.
Yeah, well, I mean, because, like, I think because we sort of, we became friends over, I think I think the only class we first shared was in junior high was the journalism. I think
Yeah.
we kind of we became more friends kind of earlier in high school. But yeah, I think
Right.
I don't even re really remember how I first saw the first X-Men movie, but I remember, like, nerding out with you about with you know like it was it was the beginning of that franchise, and also the beginning of that modern era of being, obviously we'd had, in our time, and also a little bit before our time, the Christopher Reeve and Michael Keaton Batman, Superman movies. But then we hadn't really seen, other than what, Roger Corman, a couple movies here and there. But yeah, it was just, I have a lot of memories with you just like nerding out over the X-Men franchise, and I just wouldn't have dreamed going to this without you there. So especially over the return of this show, you know. Yeah,
it's a dream come true. This was my three fandoms as a young man. The very first one was Strange. I was King Kong fan before anything. Then came Ghostbusters and that animated series. And then this was like my last real big fandom for a long time. So it was this dream come true. We got to meet Lenore Zan. She's responsible for the voice of Rogue and the sexual awakening of countless teens back in the 90s. We'll post a picture here of Brian and I getting to meet her. She was just a delight. The El Capitan staff, they did a phenomenal job hosting us. That theater was packed full of mutants, and they kept it running really well.
I loved how they especially kind of the theming. They knew their audience, and they knew the people who grew up with the show, like right down to the, you know, seeing that Saturday morning breakfast cereal station. They definitely knew their stuff.
And then Hot Pockets, and it was just so 90s, and just it just got me perfectly in the mood to see Brian, new X-Men animated series episodes. I was beside myself all night. I cried, you know that. You cried a little bit too, a little bit.
Glad we had each other to shoulders to cry on after. We were like, oh my God, just how emotional we were getting just watching this incredible, you know, as much as it is a brand new series, it is spiritually in every way, you know, a sequel to the show we grew up on, you know. And, right down to the how bold they are with the name X-Men 97. This is the next year after that finale we got back in 1996.
Yeah, and I'm beside myself. I'm so happy it's getting received well by the people who've seen the preview of it, and they're really hyping it up and saying like, "This is it." Now that you've had a few days to sit with it, your general overall spoiler-free take on it. What's your kind of impression as far as like it compares to the rest of the X-Men stuff, or how's it sitting with you?
I mean, I know you and I were both very taken with the show in so many ways that night, and I just, you know, none of that has really waned. If anything, I'm just itching to get to see it again, because, you know, we're at least when we're recording this, we're still a couple of days out from when it drops, or at least the first two episodes are going to drop on Disney Plus. We've seen three, so we got to wait a little bit longer before we see new ones. But I'm just also just really excited to see those episodes again, because like in so many ways it just felt, you know, and not just because it was, you know, a direct sequel to the show we grew up on, but it also just felt like one of the best representations of the X-Men as a whole in any medium that we've gotten. Like they very smartly knew that, you know, those old generation of us who grew up with the show who would love to see a show like this that just sort of continues their adventures, but also just take that opportunity to give them a little bit of a glow up, you know, and there's so much in so many granular ways. It just felt like a step up, like the how much it ramps up the drama, the action, the animation. I can't wait for more people to be able to see it so that we can all talk about it.
It's a 10 out of 10. It's crazy. I think this secret sauce of X-Men 97 is going to be that X-Men have always felt this cool in our imaginations. The old 90s series had such an iconic look. It was so colorful. But by today's standards, the action, the fight choreography, it doesn't really hold up to what we expect. Then you have the live action movies, which do have that. They do have the live action, amazing choreography, big budget set pieces, the Nightcrawler scene. But it didn't look like this. It wasn't as playful and colorful and comic booky. So you have like the best of both worlds with this new stuff. If you have the old look, but you have a very modern feeling, like superhero story.
Right, you're right. And the films, you know, the films would at times, you know, as we know with most people, the general opinions will vary, but the films have been kind of hit or miss, certainly. And but there were times where, especially over the time that comic book movies became more popular, and there became more of an appetite for films that would still take themselves very seriously as adaptations, but also embrace the comic book and the colors, infamously that first X-Men movie makes that quip that the audience laughed along with back then,
right,
about how like of course they wouldn't be wearing yellow spandex, but now we're like, well, it doesn't have to be spandex, but you know, everyone's excited about seeing the classic colors on Hugh Jackman again, you know, like, so,
yeah,
or not again, like for the first time, you know,
right.
And you know, and I do love that the films have these glimpses like that. Like, I know, for example, X-Men Apocalypse is a bit divisive. I think you actually divide a little bit on our opinions on that.
I don't like but that I also, movie. You know,
well, but even as somebody who does not like that movie, I remember how giddy I felt at that final scene.
Right.
Minor spoilers for X-Men Apocalypse if you haven't gotten to it, but like it basically shows you that, like, more or less that core X-Men 90s team in bright colors, very, very evocative of what you remember them wearing.
Yeah.
And it made me so excited about where they could go from there. And so, yeah, I think, but at the same time, this show, you're right, this show, it just fully embraces the things that the films would tease us with and reward us with glimpses of. Now it's just like, no, this is just the team as you remember them, in the colors you remember them. This is literally them, like, with so many other returning cast, and this is carrying that story. It's the X-Men as you remember them, but just, you know, just given the extra little panache to and also, like, another thought occurred to me. I know we briefly talked about this that night about how, like, you know, I think about how the older we get, the more that gaps of time don't really, you know, feel as long anymore. I still remember, you know, when we were in junior high and high school, and me just thinking, like, oh my God, it takes 3 years for them to make another Star Wars movie. Like, wait that long. But, you know, but the older you get, more, you know, the, well, of course, that's reasonable. Movies take time, whatever. And we're also so spoiled by getting so much great comic book adaptations and stuff like that. Anyways, I'm diverging, like, from my point is that, you know, kids these days, like, haven't really gotten.
Kids these days.
kids these days.
Brian, just give your first ironic kids these days. We're old men, Brian. But
we're
yeah.
old men. Well, I would just, you know, you think about how the fact that, you know, there's always this kind of studio drive to keep franchises fresh, to always have new entries. And, you know, we've always sort of just accepted, oh, of course, that you know, keeps things alive for it keeps younger fans aware of these characters and stuff like that. But, you know, when it's been a few years, like, there's a whole generation of kids now who don't really know X-Men. And I remember talking to you. I know, you know, you have your students, and saying, like, do they even really know X-Men? I mean, the only X-Men movies that have come out in their time have been movies that didn't make that much of an impact, and maybe they didn't see, and you know. Yeah, so I'm just so glad for also the new generation of fans, you know, that, you know, because we know we're still probably many years off until the MCU gives us their proper Marvel Studios X-Men. And I think, like most fans, I want them to take their time to get that right, because there's so many characters where they're there, so much potential. Like, I want them to do that, the whole saga, maybe. But
I think they will. I think they'll do a good job with it.
Yeah. But I just, in the meantime, I'm just so glad that kids will have this.
It's great. You know,
as much as it's like, this show was clearly made for that millennial generation who grew up with that original show, this is such a, like, excellent representation of the characters for a new generation that you can totally just dive into this, because a lot of those, you know, even the original show was very episodic in that way. Like, I mean, it was, I think it was also revolutionary as one of those first kind of kids comic book shows that rewarded you for watching it all because of how much serialized storytelling there was. But you can also really jump in anywhere. And I actually only kind of recently became aware that there's a completely huge difference in the production order and the release order of those episodes.
Yeah, you can tell. Towards the end of the 90s series, the storyline get a little strange. Like, the second to last episode is Mr. Sinister's backstory. So, like, if that doesn't tell you, things got weird.
Season 2 onwards, so, like, don't even bother.
yeah, it's pretty wild. Let's get to our main segment for today's episode, then. We're going to give 10 spoiler-free ways that X-Men 97 exceeded our expectations. I was going to get excited in there, but I was like, that's too many X's. I can start off. I think the intro to X-Men 97, because I think the legacy of the old 90s show is very much due to the banger intro then. Like, it's so good that they're using hints of that theme in modern Marvel movies. It was in Ms. Marvel. It was, you know, a little bit, I think, at the end of the Marvels. And so I was almost certain they were going to use that music again, or at least a version of it. But I didn't expect them to reanimate everything. I don't know why that was such a delight for me, but seeing the character intros and then the intros for characters we've seen before but never had their proper, you know, celebration moment. So you got like Bishop and Morph in the intro now, and it's rad. And then they have these quick little cutaways to old episodes or future teases. I loved the intro, even though it didn't have the previously on X-Men.
I agree. I think pretty much that's probably, I don't think it's hyperbole to say it's probably fans of that show talk about that theme song more than anything, how iconic that was. And you know, I still remember the day that Disney Plus went live, and knowing that they were putting the entire
X-Men
animated series on there. That's I still remember that was the first thing I booted up. I'm not going to start playing season one of this, and I remember distinctly seeing that little icon thing, skip intro. I'm like, fuck that.
No way, you don't skip that intro. So no, the new intro, just as good, if not better. It's phenomenal.
Well, what's so great about it is that they, you know, it, I think it's, you know, probably a new orchestration of it, but it's the same exact intro that you remember, just given a fresh new animation, obviously, you know, presented in widescreen, which is by the way, one of the things I love about, like, that we're getting to glimpse this universe that we're so used to seeing in that standard 4x3, you know, boob tube kind of style. And now, and obviously, you know, we're a little
older than some kids, like they don't know the boob tubes.
Well, no, that we got the incredible advantage of getting to experience these episodes in a theater, but then getting to just see this, like, the opening credits in widescreen, you know, like. Like obviously, it's like things like get scaled a little differently. So that big, like that ending where you see like the X-Men and Magneto's mutants is like crashing into each other. It just feels so much more like an epic version of the opening credits exactly as you remember them. I don't know if like I'm putting that to words well. But you're right. Yeah, it just it's exactly as you remember, just given that modern shine and it's
the polish.
Oh my God, like I think they knew that they had to get those opening credits right.
But you know, I mean, anyone who's at the event, you know, give a like or leave a comment if you agree. Hearing that theme song from the El Capitan sound system, it filled my essence, Brian. I was a flashing like beacon of light. So that's number one, the intro.
I do want to touch on something you mentioned, because I think a lot of people are expecting that little previously on. And I was kind of too. Ultimately, having seen it, like I'm glad. Because at least as we saw it, we don't know if maybe Disney Plus will add something like that, but I'm pretty sure we saw it as it will be presented. They don't really have those previously on, but I think in part it's, you know, it works because, like, even for people who are new to this, it'll fill in whatever you needed to remember from the previous finale, and at the same time, like, lest we forget, those kind of things were kind of ways for them to save on animation. Like, it just means we get more show because we don't get remember all this stuff. Yeah, I'm fine. Like, it like, as best as I remember, it just jumps you right into the opening credits as you remember.
Yeah.
And just, oh my God, it gets your blood pumping. Anyways, we got to get moving. So, yeah, go on.
That's all good. Yeah. So, number one is the intro. Can you give us number two of a way that this exceeded our expectations?
I did kind of touch on this a bit, like, from my list already, but just getting to see that widescreen widescreen look of this universe that we're so used to seeing, so boxy, and also just how much they use that opportunity, to really showcase beautiful new animation, like you're not only just getting it in such a cinematic way, but I mean, it's hard to describe unless you actually see it. I know, you know, like, you can attest to this too, that the action sequences just have a flair to them that just look just gorgeous. I can't wait to just rewatch some of these action sequences just because of how beautiful the animation looks. And, you know, bless their hearts, the animators for the original show just never quite wowed you in that level because they didn't really have the budget and the means to showcase, you know, in the way that they can now. Oh my God,
it's stunning.
I can't wait for people to see that Sentinel fight.
Yeah, Fong mentioned that it looks 90s, but not too 90s. And I think that's the perfect way to describe the animation because it feels nostalgic. And there are shots where like characters are talking and you see like, oh, like just kind of their mouth is moving. This doesn't feel like modern standards, but I think it was very well done and that it wasn't too much that it made you kind of bother. You didn't feel kitschy or anything. But I remember the first action sequence, you and I were literally gasping because of the kinetic energy and the fluid motion and the fight choreography. It just looks so good when the X-Men start, you know, getting in gear and that theme song kicks in. Oh, sick animation.
And just the creativity too of just, you know, that they have to essentially choreograph all of this. And I think they knew that the most fun that you can do in when the X-Men are in action are when they're working as a team in really creative ways. And there are so many moments like that that they that just wow you, and then suddenly another one is being thrown at you, and just the action looks gorgeous, and they use that widescreen to beautiful effect.
Yeah, and you know someone who like did background work on the animations, right?
Yeah, I know a friend of mine who I know would rather, probably rather be unnamed, but I know she she did. I can't wait to pick her brain about the work that she did on this, just because I know she the painting on the backgrounds of this whole season. And I know, like that night, she was, we ran into her at the Prince, but I know that night she was texting me, "What did you guys think?" And I was just gushing to her so much, like Jeremy and I were crying.
it's one of those like every frame of painting kind of moments. There are these moments. There's a scene that takes place in space, and the way that the space and planet Earth is drawn, but then also presented to the audience through the character who's up there. It's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful animation accompanying beautiful, powerful moments. And I totally agree. Animation's amazing. Number three.
Like the moments when like Cyclops would use powers. So sorry, but just like,
nope,
just,
do
like
it.
you would just feel like the physics of it almost. Like it's the force of his blows and just the way, like, oh my God,
it's funny because you mentioned Cyclops specifically because that first Cyclops fight was jaw-dropping, and I realize it's because they've made his beams affect him physically now. It is pushing him as much as it is knocking things away, which scientifically makes sense, I think. But
you see a little bit of recoil on it.
He uses that. I won't spoil how he does it, but he uses that to his combat advantage, and it's freaking amazing. And I feel like up until this point, his beam has always felt separate from him. And now it's like, oh, this is like an extension. This is almost a limb that he can use to like reach around and snap things and push himself. It's so good.
I mean, that's a lot of what I guess it's like. I feel like that's an extension of the beauty of the animation, is that these subtle little things that just make you feel like it just gives a little bit extra oomph, I guess, to the power. It gives it like a physical realness, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. Before it's almost like Cyclops is just the on and off, but now you can like feel the force of it. And like,
super sick. For my number three, I wrote TV-14, which is what it's being rated on Disney Plus. One of the things I liked about the old series is that it felt like more than a kid's show. It felt adult. Things were dramatic. Characters struggled with romance and trauma, and X-Men 97, based on the first three episodes, it only leans more heavily into adult themes and imagery.
Surprisingly so, almost.
You had told me about these, you know, trolls on the internet who were complaining that like Rogue's butt has deflated a bit since the 90s. But as someone who's seen the show, let me just tell you, don't worry. This show is super sexy. It's super dark. It's very respectful of, you know, the adult audience. And it did not feel tamed or, you know, censored or anything. It goes there. Yeah,
and I think some of that was really just, you know, some of the, you know, vocal minority fanboys raging.
Like baiting,
something. Well, because I know there's a couple infamous shots in the original show that like, oh, that's a rather, you know, like
clingy, voluptuous
like shot, or like, and you can tell it's, you know, the stuff that's very male-gazy, you know, but like, at the same time, it's like, look, you guys don't have to worry about like, that. Like, I mean, for one thing, it's also, at least on the point of like Rogue's outfit, for example, like this show, as much as it's direct continuation, they're calling it 97 because, you know, the show ended in 96, and this picks up like 1 year later. They right. talk about like how it's been 1 year since Xavier was gone. And so it affords the character to be a little different than you remember.
Yeah.
I actually really like how, like we touched on how, you know, part of what makes that original show so great and just also just X-Men in general as a franchise is its relatability. It's themes that are just so universal and apply to so many different kind of class struggles and you know, it's obviously there's so many ways that the 90s show has become very dated, you know, it, for better and for worse, I suppose. But part of the reason why, yeah, I mean, hell, my sister is introducing my nephews to it right now, and they love it. You know, like the stuff still works. You know,
yeah.
And even though they were kind of toned down for children, like I know you and I used to joke a lot about how much certain storylines, certain brutal moments in the comics were really kind of watered down. You know, made less terrifying in the show, but. Anyways, this new show captures that so well, but also I think it surprised me in the way that I felt like it knew that its audience, its core audience for the most part, are now adults and would afford to see a show that's a little bit more adult, a little bit more touching on themes that maybe the original show might have not quite dared to do, you know, but not too much though, you know. It feels just naturally so, like it knows that this audience has grown up a little and might want to see something a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
But that it still would be suitable for kids, and you know, and I do feel that needs to be touched on, because I, you know, because there's even a couple of moments I think you and I agree that in some of the action sequences that legit almost like. Legit scared me, like, or at yeah. least in a jump scary kind of way that I don't think the original show ever really would, and I think maybe might be a little intense for the youngest ones, you know.
Yeah, there's some nightmarish scenes involving like the antagonists, and
yeah,
but in a way that I really dug. It felt very 90s, and the 90s animation kids movies were really fun. Except for that one scene that like scarred you, and like Brave Little Toaster has it, and like Disney has it a whole bunch.
Oh, there used man, to be
this dark never side.
Never Ending Story.
Yeah.
Never Ending Story, and also like I feel like a lot of people leave this one out, but Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, the aunt, Antony.
I don't know about you, man,
Auntie.
But that, yeah, Auntie, when like, oh my god,
maybe
was, like,
the most graphic like death scene.
Yeah.
In any movie, like, but. You know, so
and like after like he dies defending the kids, and he just oh my god, like I still like have nightmares about that scorpion.
Right, but I do think like, you know, you have lows that low. I think the highs feel higher, and I think it's effective. And I'm gonna do number four if you don't mind, because you already touched on it, the allegorical nature of the show. You know, X-Men since its inception, it was always a metaphor for the civil rights movement of the 1960s, and now that social justice and political turmoil is on people's mind more than ever. I was happy to see the writers not retreat from potential controversy. Some of the imagery is definitely evocative of things we've seen in the news in the past few years. And the biggest gut punch scene for me in the first three episodes, it involves a mutant in need being denied treatment by a medical professional.
Oh,
yeah. And it's just, and where that scene goes from there is moving and genius. And it's just, but so much goodness. But part of that is because the show's not afraid to go there, and it's
I'm glad you mentioned that scene in particular, because it just also shows new facets of things that, you know, they obviously were and thankfully were willing to show in the original show, but not quite to that level, and I speak more to
more
like
direct now,
yeah, because you know how the original show and a key part of X-Men is the struggle of you know, of humans who are bigoted against them, and I know Friends of Humanity is a major part of the original show throughout and this one. But it's seeing stuff like that, seeing that kind of discrimination of like the doctor at the hospital, you know, like refusing to serve mutants who are in dire need, you know, and just the emotional gut punch of that, like, you know,
you mentioned the Friends of Humanity specifically, and like, it was actually kind of a dark moment in the theater, because like when I saw that I felt like I didn't see that on the news in my country. It felt like this outdated sort of like prominent discrimination, you know, that the civil rights movement had to fight against, and to try and try to create an America that is normalized against prejudice. And to now to be watching it and be like, oh, like that feels very familiar. I think I don't know if it's going to open people's eyes, but it definitely, I think, is a more worthwhile and important show for saying something. You know, a lot of kids shows don't say something. This is say something. And you know what? You can disagree with it if you want, but you got to respect the fact that they're trying to say a message that matters. And I thought that the show did a great job with that.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think especially, you know, look, we all know and love the late great Stan Lee, and I know how much he proudly talked about how, you know, his and, you know, Jack Kirby's creations and Steve Ditko and everyone like that was, especially what they meant with these characters, and nothing highlights that more than the struggle that the X-Men deal with, you know, and how much that is meant to be allegorical, and the fact that, you know, there are certain things in these first few episodes that deal that might remind us of certain moments that are very recent in our news, you know. I wonder if some of that might have just been coincidental too, just given that, you know, because I don't know how long it took for them to develop and write these stories, but also just goes to show you how relevant and necessary stories like these still are, especially among superhero storytelling, and how much X-Men encapsulates those kind of discussions.
X-Men matters more than ever, and I'm here for it. Can you give us number five?
I want to also highlight just some of the moments that they I think I even mentioned a bit before about but to also get more specific about creative ways that they did team ups. You know, it's always fun
combo attacks.
And I know one of them was well foiled in one of the early ads, where you see Wolverine charging a Sentinel, and Gambit gets on his back and charges his claws. Like, it's just, and I remember, like, it's funny because I had the same thought as the first time I noticed it. Like, oh my God, is Logan about to explode? Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people kind of pointing out, like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know what? It doesn't have to make sense. It's adamantium. It's indestructible. And just have fun with it, you know. It's like the moments like that where it's just like it remembers to have fun and remembers to use the characters in really creative ways, especially in combat for that matter, because, you know, that's a lot of what these characters in universe are training in the danger room for, like these little team up moments, these fastball special kind of things. And
but so I guess your number five is like the powers and the creative use of them. And so if I can just add on to that, like, I love the moments in this show when they're not in combat and their powers are being used in different ways, or hindrances in different ways. There's a scene in which Storm talks about how her nature control feels to her. And I'm getting goosebumps right now just remembering the scene. It's so well written, so well delivered, and it's beautiful and kind of somber. And it's like that is Storm. That is really good chef's kiss. Dude, Storm writing.
Absolutely. And that performance, her name escapes me right now, but the actress who played Storm, I know she's one of the OG cast members who's back.
We don't remember your name, and that's a compliment, because you are Storm to us. You know what I mean? So
I'm a little embarrassed to say, because I know part of the thing is because voice actors don't get recognized as often. We should remember their names. Let's all make an effort. I know it's something Celie Smith, I believe. But I know, like, you know, and I know you and I got to meet the great Lenore Zann, who, she's also one of the returning cast members, voices still voicing Rogue. And obviously you can tell, you know, because she's probably in her, you know, 50s, maybe 60s. Obviously she's aged a bit, but, you know, but her voice just sounds, it just, you can tell she's just got that perfect Southern draw back, like, because she's Rogue. She's been, you know, wasn't just I think it was like a whole bunch of the games that she was Rogue as well, and obviously she's been a big part of the convention circuit. So I'm just so glad to see some of these characters, some of these actors, just embody the characters again. And because I know basically everybody is back, with the exception of, I know the original actor who voiced Cyclops and Magneto have passed, right. But Speaking of which, whoever they got to replace him, especially that guy, that new guy at Cyclops, he's got his cadence down pat. Like, it's like I, yeah, they, anyway, this returning cast, it's so great to hear, especially like in Storm's case, just that kind of, I don't know how else to describe it, the almost Shakespearean way that
they speak. Grandiose and
like they know that, and especially in her case, you know, the practical goddess that she is, you know,
right?
Yeah,
Allison Seeley Smith and Iona Morris. So maybe that can be number six. The new voice also, talent.
Eric Bauza, if I recall correctly, I think he's back as Beast.
Oh yeah, that's definitely the same guy.
Yeah. Oh my god, like they're great. And also, hats off to I believe it's Allison Court, who was the original Jubilee, who chose to step down because, you know, she was like, you know, Jubilee ought to be played by a person of color. And yeah. You know, and I think that but you wouldn't even really notice because Jubilee still sounds like Jubilee. I think everybody who was stepping into somebody else's role clearly did their like their research to. I mean, they're not doing, you know, I don't think they should be obligated to do perfect imitation,
right?
But they just, you know, they just sound so much like the characters, it'll feel like no time has really passed
at all. Yeah. just as you remember. So we'll say number six is the new voice actors stepping into such iconic roles and totally, you know, doing them justice, doing them honor. Number seven, I'm gonna call Morph and Jeez. Because the characters that I used to find annoying and unappealing, like Morph and Jean, they in this new series, they have this relevance and appeal that I don't know if I'm just older and kinder in my heart, but like,
right.
You know, you and I were joking about like, why is Wolverine so torn up about Morph? He's kind of just, in the original series, he's kind of fridged at the very beginning.
Yeah. I'm really glad you bring up Morph because I feel like in so many ways, they've expanded upon and improved that character, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, well, I mean, not to knock, like, because there's a lot that they did do really interestingly with Morph in the original series, like that whole season that he's under Mr. Sinister's control. Yeah, but I know like the biggest change with Morph is appearance, but you know, at the same time, it makes perfect sense. He's a guy who always changes, you know, who can really morph his appearance, and also like they. I guess you could still just see it as like he was taking a different fate, I guess, in the original series. Because when he references that moment, where there's a moment where he references having been under Sinister's control, and he morphs into the face from like season two.
Yeah,
that little stuff like that. But then I remember with the original series, like even then, kind of thinking like, who is this guy? Because I knew that Morph was not from the comics.
Yeah, created for the show.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, so he changes his face as a callback.
Yeah, it was a nice way of just at least making the new changes to him make sense, so to speak. And also, like, yeah, this little moment, like, I know you and I also talked about that moment where I'm trying to remember the context where, like, Morph is like, he's trying to get a rise out of Logan.
And
at some point, like, But they basically like kind of wrestle a bit, and like at some point he just turns into Sabretooth,
right?
You know, just to get a rise out of Logan, and it's like,
yeah,
that's the kind of thing that somebody who is an old friend of his totally would do, and you wouldn't really see that in the original series. So it almost feels like it's further cementing what they, you know, the character in a way that the original series never really got an opportunity to do. So.
Absolutely, yeah. This show retroactively makes those old Morph episodes better because they're like, oh, okay, like I get why he likes these guys. And I, you know, Jean Grey does not need more storylines. She, you know, half the old series is a Jean Grey storyline, the Phoenix and then Dark Phoenix sagas. So to get an episode kind of centered around her for episode three, I was initially hesitant. I was like, do we really need more Jean stories? Yes, we need more Jean stories. That's a great character. And the layers of personality and identity that she, you know, sort of embodies and portrays, and then sort of like her own internal struggles visualize perfectly for the conflict of this episode and just really likable. I thought I thought she was better than she's ever been portrayed, period. Like,
oh, I agree. You know,
live action, animated. Yeah.
And shout out to the great Commander Shepard herself, Jennifer Hale, as the new Jean Grey. So
yeah,
like her performance is awesome, and what they do with her character, you know, we won't reveal too much of, but obviously, but the ways that they, I also love the ways that they're still pulling from famous storylines in the comics that they haven't gotten to, which is exactly what they start to do with her.
And, super cool.
Which was also very much the nature of the original show. Like I know I've talked to you a lot about how, you know, this show, at least for me, was and also like the Spider-Man animated series. Those were my windows into a lot of these Marvel like famous book storylines, because I didn't really have access to a comic book shop early, like as a kid early on. Most of my avenue were these shows and like the trading cards and the backstories behind them. And I, you know, I love that, at least as an adaptation of the comics, you know, obviously they tone things down to make them family friendly, but they were pulling from Dark Phoenix. They were pulling from Days of Future Past. They were, you know, with subtle changes, obviously, you know, because they had stuff like, you know, like Morph, who was a new character and stuff like that. They had to adapt things, but this is more or less, it was like a rundown of like proper Marvel history in a lot of ways, you know?
So cool. Absolutely.
And I love that this new series is still doing that.
I, you know, you touched on a little bit, but, you know, but the Easter eggs, you know, it's like when the X-Men animated series, you know, ran, it was one of the only places to get quality superhero storylines. You know, there were other shows like it, but a lot of them, like the Fantastic Four show, like the Silver Surfer show, they didn't have the staying power that this did. But, you know, now, you know, you can't watch 5 minutes of Peacemaker without seeing, you know, a couple of references to other projects. So I thought that it was very playfully done, like you said, the way that Morph would change into characters from the comics and the old episodes. And there's a scene where Jean is going through like her closet and talking about old outfits, and I haven't worn this since blah blah blah. And I don't know, it just
she
was
holds
like,
up like the Phoenix outfit at some point, right? Or something.
It's not the Phoenix outfit, it's the outfit that she wore when the Shi'ar Empire was hunting her for being the Phoenix, and it was a retro look from like an old, you know,
with that
Silver Age
mask
comic, and the kind of sprite looking masks. So I don't know, I thought all the Easter eggs felt fun. I felt like, you know, they acknowledge old timers like you and me just enough, but not so much that you have to know what's going on.
Yeah, not so much that you're feeling left out too, because I know a lot of people feel that way when they're watching, especially like a lot of people will say that about the MCU, for example, or just a lot of things that are interconnected. They feel like, oh, I'm not going to get this if I haven't seen this, you know, which also in general, I feel like people worry too much about that kind of stuff. I think a lot of these things are able to stand on their own legs and you know, even if you're not getting all these little references. But this show very much carries that same kind of torch that the original show did too, where, you know, they would inject these little things here and there that rewarded the fans who knew, oh, that Morph is Deadpool right now. Like when he in that scene from the original show, when he's just changing into people from Wolverine's past, and you see Omega Red, you see Sabretooth, you see Deadpool. And this show is very much in that same vein too. Like, didn't Morph like briefly turn the Spiral at some point too? And you know, even if you don't know the Mojo episodes, it's like you don't need to. You just know that he's just having fun pulling from random people from their history and just making random appearances. And
the Morph cameos were cute and fun.
Yeah,
I definitely think so. And so, you know, number nine, one thing I really liked is, I want to say, the fashion and like the new looks of characters. You touched on it a bit. You know, so Jubilee, they gave her, you know, kind of more Asian features than she had in the animated series. And I think it looks perfect. Like, I mean, that the character feels right for the first time. In my heart anyway. Like I never really vibed with the old look. But then Morph is now described on the website as a non-binary character. And I'm like, why wouldn't you be, by the way? If you I like to think everyone who has the power to shape change would probably be non-binary, because
they're probably the perfect character to be that for. Yeah.
And I can't believe some people are still mad about that. It's like, come on, dude. Like, you shouldn't be watching X-Men. Then, you know, so he has
You're probably not getting the point of a lot of
you should really be watching X-Men and pay attention because maybe he's got a lesson for you. So he has like the gray, it's like a non-binary face. It has really no features to it. It's kind of mannequin-esque. Storm's new mohawk.
Pulling from that look from the comics, she looks fire in it too.
Yeah, let me know in the comments, guys, because once after you watch it, I'm not a big fan of the new Magneto look. I think that's the one rare miss, but it's a look, and I'm happy for some people to like it and to cosplay it because those gloves go all the way up.
I mean, it's a little cheesy, but also like, isn't it also pulling from a similar costume from the comics too? I just love that he's just letting that mane flow. You don't see that helmet.
Oh, the hair.
Full mane of hair.
Yeah, mane Nino. And then number 10, it seems like it was a little small deal, but it's a big deal to me, public school teacher. I don't have as much time as I used to back in the 90s. The runtime. Some part of me thought, oh, they'll probably do this as like an hour-long show because all shows are an hour long. Or I was like, it's just half an hour. Is it going to feel too rushed? Is it going to feel like it doesn't have time to breathe? I think the writing, I think Bo DiMeo has done like a great job, spearheading the show. And these half hour episodes feel jam packed. They feel longer than half an hour. The amount of plot and character growth and story arc that you get. X-Men, the old show, was notorious for cliffhanger endings and to be continued. If we're being honest, they probably did it too much. So I couldn't believe that this show, with what we get in episode 3, I won't spoil it, but like that could have been a 2 or 3 episode arc easy. And they still managed to do it in half an hour and leave me just spent in the best way. So,
well, in a weird way to bring up, that's why I don't miss that they're not doing the previously on. It just means we get more of, granted, yeah, you're right. They're not running, it's not more than just your standard kind of half hour, made for television kind of length. But they make use of it, and they make use of it well. It moves at a beautiful clip. I'm sad to know we're only going to get 10 of these, at least with this season. But from what I understand, I think another season's already been greenlit. I'm like, just all right, bring it on,
I think though, there's a reason SpongeBob isn't 40 minutes long. You know what I mean? Like, it is more palpable to a young audience. It can make this be part. I mean, honestly, hot take, Disney, if you haven't decided this yet, release these Saturday morning. Oh my gosh, I got goosebumps. Recreate Saturday morning phenomena with people are going to sit down with their children Saturday morning and watch X-Men. Brian, is that a genius idea? That's genius,
Sure. No, most definitely. Well, the people who are still...
Or at least maybe like the first one or the last one. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. But
at the same time, we're in a different era. Obviously, many people are going to be consuming this and streaming in their own time.
Yeah,
but you can still. But I'm just glad that at least, especially in the case of my sister, who has a couple young boys now, that she gets to show, be nerding out with them too about the show that she grew up on.
It's heartwarming.
It may not be like tuning in exactly at Saturday morning type of thing, but they can watch a Saturday morning and get some cereal together and recreate that experience. For a new generation, I'm just so glad that we have a show that is so brilliantly poised to bring back all these OG fans and be a jumping in point for a whole new generation of kids who are going to finally kind of, understand what we're all raving about when we talk about X-Men.
And it's wild because your sister's kid, when the X-Men live action movie comes out, might think like, oh, this is the, this is the live action version of X-Men 97, there are kids who will be jumping in on this point. And I think that, you're going to love it. I mean, X-Men's back, Brian. Like it never really went away, but until now it's never truly come back. So,
oh my God. Yeah. And I think as soon as a lot of people listening, as soon as they see, at the very least, once they get to that Sentinel fight, if they're not cheering, I don't know what's wrong with them.
Yeah. So I think that's all 10 for this episode of the Old Switcheroo Screen Time. I think that's a wrap, unless Brian, did you want to say anything else about the show?
No, I just can't wait to we get to watch more, and it's going to be over so fucking fast, man. 10 episodes. 10 episodes. I'm glad they're already talking about more. Yeah.
That means that we can do an all day marathon, though, because if there's, you know, only 10 or 12 episodes, like we could, that's, you can do all those at half an hour a piece.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm into marathon, especially once they're all done. So
thank you for joining me. I just, it's so good. I had to talk to somebody about it, and I couldn't talk to anyone but you. I'm so happy to get you on our show in some fashion, and I hope you'll join us again. You want to tell our listeners Absolutely. Where they can find your stuff?
Oh, so I'm on Instagram as brian.s.lee. I'm also on YouTube as Brian Lee. I was able to get that without any dots or my middle initial. But yeah, that's more or less where you can find me. And thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we have X-Men back, Jeremy.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
They're back and they're better than ever. Yeah.
That's true. It sounds a cliche, but it's actually true, guys. I'm so excited for you, the listener, to watch this. So everyone, join us next time. Mike and I are going to do another episode of our Light Switch series. I'll be talking about the new Splatoon 3 expansion, and I can't wait to see what wacky game Mike brings to the table. Also, don't forget to visit www.theoldswitcharoo.com. That's A-R-O-O.com. There you can find links to our Spotify, our Discord, YouTube, TikTok, and all the social medias you can shake a joystick at. You can even leave an old-timey voicemail, meaning we would literally love to hear from you. Please like, comment, subscribe, and review. And as always, thanks for listening to The Old Switcheroo. We've been not talking gaming, but we have been talking retro with what's normally Mike and J-Mo.
And I'm not Mike.
But I'm J-Mo. Game on, everyone.
Bye-bye.